Amito, since everything that's happened, I kind of been intoxicated. I was still intoxicated. I was very intoxicated. Intoxicated.
Guck in my mouth. Welcome to ASP Stuff Radio, the internet radio show that will inspire you to collect farts, make you regular in the digestive sense, and wonder why the Rio Olympic swimming pools turn green but not the athletes. It's August 25th. I'm your non-green host, Aristalbert. Joining me today are my regular guests, Steve Ocrates and Paul Leto. Thanks for being here tonight.
Woohoo, yeah.
It's woo-hoo. Been a while.
Been yeah. too long.
Almost a month.
Almost a month. We got to keep these episodes going.
Monthly podcast.
Every other day podcast.
yeah. Well, so we're not green from swimming in the pools?
No one's turned green.
How did the water turn green in Brazil?
It's a mystery. But
this
I have
mystery water.
I have a suspicion. I might know what caused the water to turn green.
I will tell you, me and a couple buddies way back when, we went to a trip to Puerto Rico and we swam in his aunt's pool. And it was at night and we did get green.
You turned green?
We turned green.
Huh. You liar. How did you turn green? From the
I
water?
Guess the pool hadn't been swam in a long time or cleaned in a long time. We didn't realize it because it was dark. But yeah. Well, so you can't get green.
Your skin literally turned green.
Verde. Literally.
And how long did it take for your skin to go back to normal?
Well, we had to wash it off. It was a coating.
Okay, so maybe it was algae. Like that's
it was probably just algae.
So that's what some Olympic officials are saying, that it was algae that caused the water to turn green.
Is that the first time that an Olympic pool has been green?
Based on my life experience or of watching the Olympics, I think so.
Like the history of Olympics, who knows?
Only in a third world country.
I thought all Olympics were in third world countries.
They're mainly in, you know, rich nations.
Second world. Or first world.
So Managua.
Or second world.
Managua, Nicaragua doesn't have a shot.
No shot.
Managua, Nicaragua. We'll be hosting.
The first time it was in a South American country.
Yeah, that's historical.
Yeah. Usually it's only Europe or
Tokyo.
Asia, you know, Japan.
Well, it was almost canceled, right? Wasn't it almost canceled?
Because of the contaminated water?
No, because of the contaminated mosquitoes.
All of that stuff.
Yeah, there's a combination of everything.
And corruption.
I dug up some interesting things about the Olympics in general.
Okay. And robbing Olympians.
Yeah. Well, before we talk about the Olympics, I have several questions from our dedicated audience. Our listeners sent quite a few interesting questions that I think we should share to the rest of the world.
I didn't know they were still listening.
Gita and Heideko still are out there.
Well, I got one from Gita. This segment is Ask ASP Anything.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now that time for ASP Stuff Radio to answer your question.
Now, since we're pressed for time, we can only provide a two-sentence response, according to Steve Ocrates.
Give or take a couple sentences.
Okay.
Well, more than 140 characters.
Well, we'll just reduce it down to three words.
Okay.
Okay, so the first question comes from Gita. If gravity is a real force, why can't it prevent a helium balloon from floating away? If it can keep all planets in orbit or from flying into deep space, why can't gravity keep kids happy when they let go of their balloons? That's a very interesting and perplexing situation.
Thought-provoking,
yeah.
Philosophical, almost.
Hmm. Yeah, but we don't... No, that's more scientific. And our
okay, realm, Krauss. Poop on everything.
Our realm is more philosophical, so we probably don't have an answer. No, I thought...
Well, what's the scientific explanation? In three words or less.
Three words.
I have your response, and if you can...
The balloon floats till it has equalized with the mass of air.
What?
So that's a three letter or one phrase response, right? So it won't float all the way to another distant planet. It'll eventually stabilize, right? It'll go keep going up and up and up, but maybe up until it could get to outer space. But then the helium mass of the balloon equals the mass of whatever air, the density of air in the atmosphere, then it'll stop going away.
But that's if it does.
Well, ow.
Oh, jeez.
That's if it doesn't burn up in the atmosphere, right?
No, yeah, it's going to pop at some point.
That's a good point. It might pop.
But okay, so you're saying that helium is lighter. It has less mass than air.
Yeah, so air is composed of a bunch of different elements, which probably includes
farts.
I don't think it normally includes helium, but includes like nitrogen and oxygen and carbon dioxide. Yeah.
So it outweighs air.
No, opposite. It's less than air.
It's less than air.
Yeah. Okay. Less than the normal surrounding atmosphere.
I'm going to be a kid philosopher here. It's a balloon. It's a flimsy balloon. Gravity can pull that damn thing down to the ground. And Gita has a good point. If it can keep the planets in orbit, then why can't it keep the balloon, the helium balloon, from floating away? It's a flimsy
it
little...
It can when it gets into outer space.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the planets themselves are massive, right? More massive than a balloon, right? And the planets are being kept in place by the sun, which has a much larger mass.
So basically what you're saying is that the reason why I fart is because gravity is extracting the gas from my inside.
We didn't say that either. Why are you coming to these weird conclusions?
That's why the gas travels.
Now, once it comes out of your buttocks, yeah, it'll float up.
Okay.
What the density of your fart will be dispersed according to the molecules, the density of the molecules, or the mass of the molecules.
Mm. I'm 73% convinced.
Well, and why did you? So am I wrong? I mean, if what's that?
No, I'm just playing. I'm just being an idiot.
Oh, so then why do baseballs travel farther in Colorado than they do in San Francisco?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, so if you compare the density of air in San Francisco to the density of air in Colorado, it's much less in Colorado. So, again, we go back to the mass or the density of air.
Okay.
All right. I'm sure Gita will be pleased with your scientific response.
Krausian response.
Yeah. That was good.
Very good. Okay. Next question. This one is from a new listener.
Oh, wow.
Or maybe they've always been listening, but decided to pose a question. Vijay Kumar.
He was embarrassed to announce himself as a fan.
Dear ASP Stuff Radio, my cat, which I know you guys love cats, my cat only poops when I hold him over toilet. But when he go in box of litter, he cry. I take him out, hold him over my toilet, and out comes the poop. Why is that? Whoa. That's an interesting one. Anyone want to tackle that?
Huh. Well, I don't have a cat. But I could see how the cat probably feels more comfortable over the toilet.
Hmm. Yeah.
And lets loose.
He probably feels uncomfortable. So I was thinking maybe the cat doesn't like to be enclosed. He's probably claustrophobic.
What, one second, I was offline.
I was wondering what happened to you.
Yeah.
I thought maybe you got offended by this pooping cat.
So
yeah, that's it. You have
to, you have to debrief me on what happened with this cat.
Okay, so the question is, my cat only poops when I hold him over toilet, but when he go in box of litter, he cries.
I read that one, okay.
I take him out, hold him over toilet, and now comes the poop.
Okay.
I think he's claustrophobic. He probably doesn't like to be enclosed within spaces, the walls.
Yeah, I felt like he's comfortable over the toilet. That's why.
Yeah.
Just a comfort thing.
My question to Vijay is, does your cat just automatically poop when you hold him over the toilet, even if he hasn't eaten a meal for more than 24 hours? Is this like a automatic thing that occurs?
I think the density of the air above the toilet is more.
Okay.
And what's so in this toilet?
Or is less, and it extracts the poop.
Is there a black hole inside this toilet?
Maybe.
A massive super black hole.
Just automatically pulls the poop out of your cat's
sucks it out.
Anus.
That's got to be it. That's the Krausian explanation.
All right, very good. I think we've handled that pretty well. On to...
You should save these questions, and the next time there's one of those Origins Project presentations, ask them.
That's a perfect question. Kraus just scratches his head.
You should get them, yeah. Let him read them.
Perfect. All right, this seems a little bit more practical. We can try to figure this one out. This one comes from Sanjaya.
Huh. Oh, the American Idol contestant?
Yeah, I was wondering, is that the American Idol?
Nice. Sanjaya. Sanjaya, she knows about it.
Is it a girl or a guy?
It's a guy.
Guy. Sanjaya.
Yeah. Huh. The one and only.
The one and only American Idol. Did he win?
No, he was terrible.
Oh, it was horrible. Okay.
Oops.
I came to Rio.
Maybe he was good. I don't know.
And eat at breakfast to watch Olympic Games. I like the swimming. Waiter mad at me because I didn't do a tip. My friend tell me to tip, so I do a tip. But the waiter still mad at me. I ask why. She say I tip before the tax. I need a tip after tax? I'm confused. Do I do the tip before the tax or after the tax? What's different?
Should be after the tax.
After the tax? Well, if you do it after, then aren't you paying more money?
Yeah, but overall. I mean, you're going to give, you want to make sure it includes all of the total bill, the percentage of the total bill, not
the subtotal.
Well, here in America, they do it after the tax.
No, yeah.
The tax doesn't go to the business. I mean, Sanjaya might have a point.
Other parts of other states, so for example, Florida, they have you do the tip before the tax. So, in other words, applying it to the subtotal.
Yeah, that might actually make sense. But here in California, they do it after, right? What about in Arizona?
Arizona is also after.
Hmm. But so, in Florida, Zika territory, they do it. they do it before.
They do it before.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Hmm. So good question, Sanjaya.
I think it does actually might make more sense to do it before, because the taxes, they just go to the either the local government, state, or federal, you know. They don't go towards the business, so
no.
You'd want a tip based on the business.
The business, right. That makes sense. That
not actually, on like the government stuff.
So I think you seem to be in line with Sanjaya's perplexed state of mind.
But in different countries like Japan, they don't tip at all.
Yeah, that's another good issue. Is why doesn't the business just pay the employees or the waiters additional money?
I guess they're cheap.
They're cheap, and there's an incentive to motivate workers to do a good job. Hmm. What's the deal with tipping? You can make.
Why do we tip after the tax?
Shouldn't it be before
the tax?
After
it's all? Not like the restaurant gets the tax.
Or why tip at all?
Why tip at all? Why call it a tip?
And why don't they offer you Gorn Nuts while you're waiting for your check?
You mean Gorn Nuts?
Gorn Nuts.
All right.
So, Sanjaya, I hope you were somewhat satisfied with their Seinfeldian response.
Yeah, I don't think that was helpful at all.
No, sorry, Sanjaya. Go back to
maybe
singing.
Next time.
That was more of a philosophical question than a Krausian.
Yeah.
Or response in Krausian.
This one comes from Dusty Butts. After living here for 57 years, I have seen an Arizona dust storm or two. What irritates me is the growing trend to call our Arizona dust storms haboobs. While other countries in the world may call them that, this is the United States. Even more, this is Arizona, not some Middle Eastern nation. I am insulted that local TV news crews are now calling this kind of a storm a haboob. How do you think our soldiers feel coming back to Arizona and hearing some Middle Eastern term that is clearly an Arizona phenomenon. Dust storms such as we have are as unique as cacti and diamondback rattlesnakes. Keep it as it is, an Arizona dust storm.
Yeehaw, it's America.
Where did you find this question?
What are you talking about? From the was sent to our email, aspstuffradio@gmail.com.
How come it sounds like you might support Orange Chicken?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like one of our listeners.
Yeah, I think this who's this imposter?
So I don't understand. Why are you asking us to? Are you trying to have us spread out the word that haboobs are inappropriate words to be using for dust storms?
So why is it inappropriate? Because it sounds Middle Eastern?
Yeah, I'm a little concerned. I don't get it. I mean,
but sounds like a Syrian refugee would call.
Who is calling it a haboob?
Well, that does happen now and then. I'll hear some news crew call them haboobs.
You've lived in and out of Arizona. Have you heard it?
Yeah, I've heard it now and then, but not like it's a trend where every single affiliate of a news station is calling it a haboob.
It must be a recent thing.
And now on your 5 o'clock news, there has been a haboob going through Phoenix.
A haboob!
Is that what
a mighty haboob is approaching. Haboobie.
There's a couple of haboobs, plural haboobies.
Yeah, there's two haboobies. Well, Mr. Dusty Butts, I'm afraid there are hundreds of English words of Arabic origin that might offend you and your soldiers. So, for example, does it upset you if I say alcohol, alchemy, orange, or sofa?
Sofa.
Yeah, I had to do some research and I found out that these words have Arabic origin, Middle Eastern descent.
Are you sure that Orange Chicken didn't infiltrate our podcast and send that question?
Yeah.
I think it was him. He probably sent that.
I didn't realize how much hatred or bigotry can carry over to language, to words. Not just people, but to word usage.
Yeah, I guess he might get offended with the origins of a lot of English words.
This is not just a tomato-tomato thing. There's definitely some hostility.
A dust storm versus haboob thing.
Yeah. It's brewing deep inside his racist blood.
We might want to get rid of Dusty Butts as a listener.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to block him.
We don't need no Dusty Butts.
Haboob Butts.
Speaking of butts, we have... this is a question not from a listener, but from Steveocrates. You said you discovered this interesting website about children asking scientific questions or questions that can be dealt with science.
I forgot about this. All right.
Well, here's this question from a little kid. How much space does a fart take in your body?
Yeah. Okay.
What? So is there a scientific explanation?
Yeah, apparently there is, but I didn't read the whole thing.
I read it and it was very detailed, and I just want to take out the juicy nuggets. So here's the juicy fart nuggets. Quote, imagine a bottle of nail polish. That's a rough analogy for the volume of the daintiest of poots.
Poots, not poots.
Now imagine a can of soda. That's the volume of a really big stinker. Your body is a wonderland, end quote. So I guess, depending on the size of your body, your fart can take up a bottle of a nail polish or a soda can.
So then why are some like extremely strong and potent and feel like they're bigger than a nail polish bottle?
Well, that they're because it's the size of a can of soda. Those big ones can fit inside Coca-Cola
cans. Plus or minus a couple bottles.
How many soda cans worth can you fit?
Yeah, there you go. Some people can poop a six-pack worth of soda cans.
Poot.
Toot.
Six-pack worth.
Now, another related question that was asked in this article was, how do you measure a fart? How do you collect a fart? Is there a way to quantify a fart? Now,
in a fishnet?
I don't think a fishnet can capture or trap
you can measure the size, right?
Apparently.
Of the bubble.
I think you need the hadron a particle collider to capture that.
Particle collide farts.
Fart molecules.
Well, according to their website, and I'm going to simplify in crude terms, scientists basically shove tubes inside your butthole. And a fart machine measures the volume of those farts.
No, there's nothing
in real time. They use a CT scan.
I'm gonna have to fact check that.
Well, yeah, where'd you get this
information? Like I said, in crude terms. But no, they mentioned
they jam a tube.
A catheter. What do you call it? A catheter?
Catheter?
Catheter.
Who would agree to that experiment?
Some weird fellows out there that are desperate for money.
Oh, I guess they pay them.
Or they really want their farts to be measured.
A fart catheter? A fartheter?
A fartheter. Hmm. Well, there you go. Curious minds out there that wanted to know how much space a fart takes?
Yeah, I think we've all been enlightened.
Yeah.
Knowledge is power. Good. Fart power.
On that farty note,
let's talk about cats.
We're going to talk about cats.
But first,
we're going to talk about guns. Woohoo! Rootin', tootin', shootin'. Right.
That's a good From hour.
Tootin' to shoot.
Rootin', tootin'. Yeah. Oh, Steve Ocrates sent this story to me. On August 1st of this year, a law was passed that will permit licensed gun owners to carry concealed loaded weapons on any Texas campus. I have an NPR.
All right. Nasal.
Nasal story to play.
Tomorrow marks 50 years since a national tragedy played out on the campus of the University of Texas at Austin.
This is a KLRN news bulletin. A sniper with a high-powered rifle has taken up a position on the observation deck of the tower on the campus of the University of Texas. He is firing at persons within his range.
The sniper was a former Marine and expert marksman named Charles Whitman. By the time police shot and killed him, 14 people were dead and more than 30 others wounded. As the UT Austin campus marks that grim anniversary tomorrow, a new gun law will take effect in Texas. For the first time, licensed gun owners will be allowed to carry loaded, concealed handguns on all Texas public university campuses. Dr. David Daniel is one of the officials charged with implementing the new law. He is Deputy Chancellor of the University of Texas System, and he joins me now. Dr. Daniel, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Well, let me just ask, how do you feel about this law going into effect on this anniversary?
Well, it's unfortunate that the anniversary of that tragic shooting happens to coincide with the implementation of the concealed carry law. As chance would have it, the 50-year anniversary is the date August 1, 2016, and that happens to be the date that the concealed carry law goes into effect for public university campuses in Texas.
What exactly are the provisions of the new law? Kind of spell that out for us.
The law extends the right for concealed handgun license holders who already have the ability to carry their handgun generally in Texas to carry those concealed handguns onto college campuses. The unique aspect of the Texas law is that the law empowers university presidents to establish reasonable rules for the carrying of concealed handguns, taking into account the unique characteristics of each campus, but presidents may not establish rules that prohibit or generally appear to prohibit the carrying of concealed handguns.
So what would be an example of maybe a restriction on the UT campus that's different on the Texas A&M campus at College Station?
So in some of our campuses, the concealed carry is not allowed in dormitories, whereas in other campuses it is allowed. Probably the most significant difference is a provision established at the University of Texas Austin that allows occupants of individual offices to not allow concealed carry within their office. I expect some other campuses in the University of Texas system to adapt that rule as well, but I expect that others will not. So we do see differences at different campuses.
Are you preparing any additional levels of security or any trainings, drills, as a result of preparing for this law?
We've put some additional training in place for our police officers to deal with weapons. We have talked about putting additional security cameras in place at key locations. So the implementation of the law has raised anxiety. It has raised concerns. And we're trying to use it as an opportunity to increase safety and security on campus in general.
On the topic of all this debate and dialogue, some professors are attempting to reverse this law with a lawsuit, and in it they're noting the timing of it going into effect on a mass shooting anniversary. So, Dr. Daniel, I have to ask, will this law make UT campuses safer?
Well, we don't have an opinion one way or the other about whether the law will make the campus safer or not. Chancellor McRaven was very clear, and I agree with him, in that our preference would not be to allow concealed carry on campus. However, we're very respectful of our legislative process. Our elected leaders made their decision. The governor signed it into law. We at the university are committed to following the law, making our campuses just as safe as they possibly can be, and do so in a way that does not alter the learning environment at our campuses.
Dr. David Daniel is Deputy Chancellor of the University of Texas System. Dr. Daniel, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
Way to go.
Wow.
Nice. Do it on the anniversary of a mass shooting.
Fire away.
Perfect. Yeah.
I doubt that it was a coincidence that the law was passed on the anniversary of the shooting. It was clearly calculated and planned out in advance.
50 years to the day.
Yeah. How it just happened to occur on the same day that we decided to pass this law.
Yeah, but he sounds like he's against it, right? I mean, if he was for it, he would be like, yeah, this is going to make our campuses safer. If there's somebody, some loony out there, our folks carrying guns who are not crazy will probably shoot them up.
Well, then
right in time.
Well, then how come he was evading the direct question when she asked, will gun laws make Texas campuses safer? And he was like,
well, he laughed.
Yeah, he laughed.
He knows, no, it's not going to make them safer.
Right, right.
We're all in trouble.
Yeah, but the guy doesn't have a choice, right? He might be running this universe, the public universities. It's not his say. Well, it's the people, the senators and the congressmen.
What do you mean,
the governor?
What do you mean he doesn't have a say? He's okay. I don't have
an
opinion. But she asked him a simple, direct question. Do you think the gun law will make Texas campuses safer? And he says, I don't have an opinion. What do you mean you don't have an opinion?
Right, but he doesn't. Well, yeah, he doesn't have a choice.
No. He's not saying whether he has a choice or not. She's asking a simple question. All he says is the following: we are committed to following the law, making our campus just as safe as they possibly can be, and do so in a way that does not.
If they make an opinion, it's going to make parents or people who are supporters or aren't supporters feel one way or another about whether or not they want their kids to go to those schools. So he can't say, we're against this or we're for it. So he's just going to say, we don't have an opinion. But he's implying that they aren't for it. So he's very smart in the way he answers.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like he's for it. But he can't, because it's a public university system, he can't ban it. Now, private universities, they can decide, no, we don't want it.
But then he says,
they rely on funding from the state. So if they say, we're against this, that might hurt.
Yeah, he can't. No, I think Pauleto is exactly right. They can't have. Now, if he was for it, you know, he might as well just say it. But the fact is, he's taking the fifth.
I don't know. I have this feeling that you can go either way. In the response, what I was saying, his response implies that he's for it. So listen, he says, we are committed to following the law, making our campus just as safe as they possibly can be, and do so in a way that does not alter the learning environment at our campuses.
Yeah, if you just read the words, it sounds like that. But if you hear it, he kind of laughed when she asked the question.
Yeah,
simply said, all we can do is make our campus as safe as we possibly can, knowing that anybody there could be carrying a gun. So that's all we can do.
Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Mass shooting breaks out. Oh, well, it's not our fault. We're doing whatever we can do.
Yeah, that guy's not for it. You can tell.
I understand that. But how can he say that guns in the classroom will not alter the learning environment? Part of my job as a college professor at both Mesa and ASU is to promote a safe and relaxed atmosphere. How are students supposed to feel at ease knowing that someone in the class might be carrying a loaded Glock?
They can't. So that's why I said we're going to do whatever we can do to make sure that it doesn't disrupt the learning environment. But he knows it will.
Yeah.
It will.
It was the congressmen and the senators. They were the ones who passed the law. And it probably the crazy people in the state that voted for these people are all for it anyways.
So, I don't know. But see, I don't know. I don't even know if that's true. I think it's just a select few that make the decision.
It's whoever voted, right? Again, it's whoever got out and voted. And if there was voter corruption, too.
It's the Wild West. It's Texas.
Yeah.
That's how Tejas is.
Well, my theory, crackpot theory, maybe, is that the state of Texas is just too damn cheap to hire additional security officers on campus. So they figure they would just let students take matters into their own hands by allowing them to bring guns on campus.
I mean, every student for themselves.
Yeah, just
it could be that. I mean, if they were, I don't know what it is. I just think people are that crazy where they'd rather take matters in their own hands.
It doesn't. A rational mind would think, why not just have extra security? Add those security cameras. Have more. Cops patrolling certain parts of the campus.
The gun lobbyists are powerful people.
And my other concern is whether or not this is going to trickle down into all other universities. ASU students are already wanting to pass a gun law.
I thought that already passed there.
No,
in Arizona. No,
for campuses not yet, but they want to,
for parks,
but not for parks. I don't think for ASU. I'll do some research, but I'm pretty sure Michael Crow does not want that. He was pretty straightforward. He does not want it.
But this paves the way for a state like Arizona to pass that type of law.
And I'm considering if that happens, then
I mean they could plan it on some other wild, crazy shooting anniversary. I don't know if there were any mass shootings in Arizona.
I think it's going to make kids anxious and fearful. And
that would be like in 2051 on September 11th, they make hijacking planes legal.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect analogy.
I suppose.
And it wasn't a coincidence, trust us. It just happened to coincide on that date.
Unfortunate.
And I'm sure there's even people alive who are related to these people who got killed, and that's a slap in the face.
That's backhanded
slap in the face.
And it was a 50-year anniversary, so they're probably dead anyways. I don't remember it.
They're probably dead, so it's beyond their memory.
Nothing like that has happened anytime recently.
Nah.
Don't worry about it.
I thought this was interesting. in an effort to retaliate against the campus carry gun law, some students at the University of Texas started a movement called Cox Not Glocks by handing out and carrying dildos.
This is a kid
creative.
Here's a little clip. It was an interview conducted by a student journalist, so the quality is not that great.
And then so, why did you decide to found Cox Not Glocks?
It started as a giant joke on the internet. I thought I was just cracking a very immature joke and pointing out the fact that Texas has lots of laws about harmless sex toys to ban them and get them out of our public spaces, but they continue to normalize gun culture and gun violence by putting them everywhere.
And then what do you hope this movement is going to accomplish in the future?
We don't think that like a legislature is going to turn over a law just because 5,000 people are carrying dicks around all of a sudden, but we do hope that people start to talk more about gun culture. And you know, these days a mass shooting happens, you forget about it the next day because we've lost our sense of discomfort and we lost our sense of, you know, humanity when it comes to people dying. Gun violence just happens too often. So something that is very jarring that people do notice and get uncomfortable and start to speak out about is that having a big old dildo on your backpack, they're going to say, that's obscene, that's bad for society, that's horrible. Why do you have it around my kids? How is a concealed gun, just because it's out of your sight, any different?
And then, were you surprised that this movement grew as big as it did?
I mean, I guess I think it resonated with a lot of people in a lot of ways. I didn't expect it to take off. I thought it was just a joke between me and my friends, but it seems to mean a lot to a lot of people. And there are so many interpretations of this conversation surrounding feminism and intersectionality and violence and intellectualism and the political climate these days. So I don't want any of these uncomfortable conversations to not be had. They need to be out in the open and to be talked about.
Apparently, Karen dildos is a way of expressing their outrage.
They're proving a point for sure.
Yeah, so I guess it'd be better if they legalized sex toys versus handguns or guns, right?
So they're against sex or sex toys, but they're all for violence and guns.
Yeah, I mean, because the people who helped pass this law, they're very religious, very conservative, and that viewpoint, right? We're against kind of having sex, right? And but you got to protect yourself. You got to have that second amendment. I mean, your right to bear arms. That's fine and dandy.
Even though they're not in a well-regulated militia, but that's beside the point. Nobody pays attention to that Second Amendment.
No, let's ignore that part. Now the problem
remember the what school was that? The little elementary school that had all those kids killed.
Sandy Hook.
What Sandy Hook? And what was the reaction to that from the National Rifle Association? They were like, "Oh, just put guns in the hands of the teachers. That will protect us. That's what we need to do. Mm-hmm. We need more guns out there." Yeah. The answer is not less guns. The answer is more guns.
Infiltrating our world.
Guns. Lots of guns.
Guns. Lots of guns.
Guns. Lots of guns.
The problem with the Cox and Glocks movement is they're not concealing these dildos, whereas with the guns, you can conceal them.
Yeah, but you can't prove a point if you conceal it. But they did say, oh, well, if it's someone in someone's backpack, how is that less offensive or egregious than concealing a gun?
True, true.
Yeah, and what's better or what's worse? Concealed guns or unconcealed guns? That's debatable.
And loaded ones.
They have to be loaded, right? What's the point in unloading?
Well, you have your magazine or whatever you call it, your bullets. Or I guess magazines are for military guns or high-powered rifles.
High-powered guns.
Yeah, but handguns, you have to... You should be able to at least carry an unloaded gun, and then if a situation arises, if you're a trained person, then you will know how to quickly load your gun. I don't know.
I don't know.
I never held a goddamn gun.
I think what you should do is have an unconcealed and a concealed at the same time. So one, you could show you have your Glock on the side of your pants, and then your big gun in your backpack. And maybe a gun in your boot strap.
Your boot strap.
Just in case.
Is Glock short for Glockenspiel, the musical instrument that looks similar to a xylophone?
You'll have to look up the origin of words.
I don't think so.
I got my Glockenspiel. I'm going to attack you with my musical instrument.
I think it's a type of gun.
Okay.
I don't know. Why not have a concealed weapon in a guitar case?
Our Gaston Glock was a gun designer back in the 70s and 80s.
1670s?
19.
Okay, so we all agree we're safer with guns on our campuses, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Do you think guns will make you feel safer on campus if you were a student?
If I had one.
Or do you not have an opinion on one way or another, like that Dr. Daniel
guy?
They
think they should sell the guns at the bookstore.
There you go.
Of a bookstore... Campus bookstore and guns.
Yeah, forget
all the supplies you need, right?
Just forget about books. Get your guns.
Isn't there a gate to get into a university, so can't they just hand them out? Oh, you know, like during a baseball game, they hand out bobbleheads. They should just first 10,000
gets your free hand grenade,
free Glock.
Are they give it out with the syllabus.
Yeah, there
especially philosophy.
And to
protect yourself from harsh ideas that might offend you.
And come with a brochure, a quick 5 steps on how to use it.
If your verbal argument won't win your professor over, then use your Glock.
There you go.
That's an argument he cannot win.
You can probably get straight A's that way.
I have my big, thick collection of Plato dialogues to protect me from gunshots.
Yeah, try that. See how it works.
It might actually work. There was if you guys heard of the show Mythbusters, they used phone books to try to make a car bulletproof. Yeah, and I think a thickness of, it was either 10 or 15 phone books actually would work.
Yeah, so I don't think I'm going to carry
them. If you have,
books.
You could. Wear a bodysuit of philosophical documents.
Well, there you go. Every student should be wearing armor.
Layers of
thick phone books.
Of philosophy books. So do we have 9 minutes or we're over the 40 minute
mark? We're past, so we can't talk about close. We can't talk about the Olympics. I had lots of stuff to say.
Really?
Yeah.
Let's say one thing.
One thing. Well, since we're on the topic of cocks and glocks, there's one related to sex, or should I do something different?
Is it baby appropriate?
No.
Is there a baby appropriate Olympic topic? Okay.
Well, this is one fact about the Olympic Games in general.
Okay.
Poor people get shoved out of the way to make room. This is taken from a website, so I'm going to read straight from it. All the real estate that was developed for the Olympic Games, such as world-class sports venues and residential housing, ends up displacing thousands of poor people. For example, 30,000 Atlanta residents were displaced by the 1996 Games, and in 1988, 720,000 were forced from their homes in Seoul.
Seoul? Or is this Korea?
Korea?
Yeah. The ones who were unlucky enough to not have a roof over their heads were rounded up and housed out of sight during the Games, but nothing compares to Beijing. 1.5 million Chinese people were forced out of their houses in the lead-up to the 2008 Games. Even if residents are not forcibly displaced, they can look forward to their rents going up so high that they can't afford to live in their homes. As for all those beautiful sports venues in Greece, 21 of the 22 stadiums are now bum colonies and bird poop collectors. But hey, it's all worth it so that we can establish once and for all which country is the best at synchronized swimming. And I did some research to find out if that had anything related to the recent Rio Olympics for 2016, and I found out that tons of real estate that was developed since 2009 for the Olympic Park in Rio forced 70,000 people to evict their favelas, which is a Portuguese term for a, quote, Brazilian shack or shanty town or a slum. So all of this just to see a wealthy, privileged, alcoholic white guy swim in water to collect his to collect his bling bling gold medals.
Swim in green filth.
Watch me swim and dominate.
Yeah.
Where did those people go?
I have no clue. They're far away.
Displaced.
Just moved over, shoved aside. I think we lost Steveocrates.
Steveocrates disappeared again.
Hello?
Steven?
Hello? Okay, I'm going to sound like I'm in the bunker.
All right.
That's Bill Gates.
News flash. Steven got swallowed up by a big butthole.
I'm stuck in a butthole.
Butthole.
Yeah, and I hear a baby screaming.
Huh, interesting. You need to get out of that butthole.
I'm in a bunker with a baby.
Okay.
All right. So last I heard, you guys were talking about Slumdog.
Displaced.
Displacing poor people all just for Michael Phelps to win.
I watched that video.
Hold on. There's more. Okay. In confidential interviews with former police, Amnesty International discovered Rio was killing two people per day in 2015 and actively covering up the extrajudicial murder of, quote, undesirables to cleanse the city before the Olympics. Security force abuses have also alleged in the eviction of 77,000 poor residents from favelas to make room for the games. Neighborhood demolitions led to violent clashes between protesters and police, and the unrest has spilled over politically. So that confirms my research.
You have to do something, right? You got to make space.
Yeah, you gotta build, and you got to, in order to build, you got to demolish stuff in the way. So let's
give and take.
So how far were they displaced in Rio? Do we know?
Hours away from their...
And a lot of them didn't have choices, or were they provided an offer they couldn't refuse?
Some were offered money. Others did not want to take the money, the government's money. But you watched that video I posted?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what'd you think?
I mean, it didn't surprise me. I think you do need, rich white folks do need their privacy. And especially if you're going to broadcast an event so important, so significant as the Olympics, you don't want to see all that poverty. I mean, it makes you cringe.
And it makes me hate the Olympic Games.
If you know about it, I mean...
I didn't know about this.
That's the whole point. Yeah. I mean, the whole point is not knowing about it because, you're going to have film crews and you're going to have journalists that might want to, I don't know, how do you avoid it? I guess by displacing them, you avoid the whole topic, or it makes it worse. I don't know.
I think it makes it worse. For one thing, I never really understood the Olympic Games to begin with. I was never a fan of the Olympics. I just thought it was silly high school games that we used to do. And
Because you're well educated and philosophical. But
no,
so here's my take. At least to me and Myra, I mean, the Olympics is an important thing. Like, it's because you see everything that's negative in the world, and there's all this bad, you know, nobody gets along. There's all these conflicts. And the Olympics is one time during every couple of years where the world sort of gets together and says, all right, this is it. We're going to all get together and we're going to sort of cooperate, commingle, compete respectively and just come together. It's that one time that they actually do that.
Minus the
But when you hear all that stuff that so that's the essence of it, right? That's what it's supposed to be. Because everything outside of it, the world can't get along. The world is a mess. And so even in what you're describing, all this stuff, those atrocities, even in trying to make that happen, they're going about it the wrong way. They're committing crimes and killing people or whatever just to make the games happen. And that's what's wrong. But the games itself is as right a thing as the world can do. So I think that's where you don't want to just push that aside, but you have to do it the right way.
Okay. A response. One, I would buy that argument once the Palestinians and the Israelites can compete with one another.
Oh, that's a whole...
I think we're a couple years away. It's possible.
Two, but that, okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, there's a good side and a bad side. So there's a lot of politics, right? Because these corrupt governments are going to try to hide as much as they can. And NPR, I'll give another example. They just had this story about Australia way back in the day. They were accepting, I don't know if it was Syrian refugees, but what ended up happening is they weren't allowed into Australia per se, but they were allowed on this island, Nauru, and there was a lot of corruption going on in this island. Like kids were getting raped, and nobody, the government was not allowed to speak out about it because they wanted to show that they were actually doing some good. They were taking refugees, but the public didn't want them to take refugees. So there's this little disconnect. So, yeah, there's it might look like it's great, and everybody's holding their hands and singing Kumbaya, but there's a whole other side to things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be like you find out, okay, Walt Disney, to build It's a Small World, he demolished thousands of people's homes to create them, right? Or he tore down all the orange tree orchards to make Disneyland.
Or that's what it's like. Or people in Starbucks, in order for them to enjoy their cappuccinos and frappuccinos, they need to justify sweatshops and child labor.
Or Nike with their shoes.
Or Apple on their iPads.
Or like Gucci or Louis Vuitton. Oh yeah, we're high end and we're not sacrificing sweatshops, but yet you know.
Well, that's for a profit too.
you know there's more to it, right? Yeah, I get that there's a good side to it, but
what I'm saying is that's what it should be. So if you do it the right way, it's the best thing that you can do.
So what they need to do, this is hard. How do you build all these expensive housing, residential homes and sports venues and other real estate without displacing poor people?
You have to have the infrastructure to do it without having to resort to that.
Because that's what ended up happening. So you have Michael Phelps and all these wealthy, rich, privileged, not just white people, but just the wealthy people of certain parts of the world. Does that, to make them happy and do these little sports to win their gold medal and make them even more rich, does that justify displacing poor people?
I don't know.
No, it doesn't. And so if you don't do that, you know, what are your other options?
The other options is you don't pay so much money to build these stadiums and just host your events in your high school gym.
Yeah, you have to do what you can, but that's
not going to happen.
You're probably not
going to do it. One at a time. What?
They just want their money, right? These governments, they're going to pretend, oh, no, our facilities are not sufficient. Give us the money and we'll build new stadiums. But what are they really using the money for?
Well, not cleaning up the dirty water, that's for
exactly
sure.
And that's what happens with gentrification, right? When you have you're trying to make a poor, impoverished part of your city or your state, you're trying to get business out of it. So what do? You start putting nice properties, nice businesses there, and you push out all the poor people. They can't afford to live there all of a sudden. So they got to move, and so they're displaced. They got to be displaced.
Now, there's a history of country that hosts the Olympics. They end up going bankrupt, like with Greece.
Yeah, if you're not running it right, if your government's really losing the money, the money that they get from running Olympics, I guess that's...
Yeah, it's very expensive to do things like that. That's why if you're going to do it, you have to make sure that you're capable of doing it. Like even San Francisco hosted, well, they didn't actually host it, with Santa Clara hosted the Super Bowl. They lost a lot of money because all the money really went to San Francisco where everybody was staying.
Oops.
Yeah. I look at Ryan Loki's face and I don't think it justifies those 77.
I was still intoxicated.
It's very intoxicated.
Stupid, because he was getting like I don't know, Nike deals or something. So he loses all that money because he was dumb.
But it really wasn't his fault if you think about it. He was
drunk.
Well, he was drunk, but I mean, the people, they weren't robbing him. They're trying to take. They threatened him with a gun, and they tried to take his money.
But they were cops.
I don't know who they are.
Pointing a Glock at his forehead.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they were cops. I mean, that was the whole reason. They were justified because they thought he was...
Our mother.
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 Would always talk about the police in Nicaragua, how they were corrupt. Mm-hmm. They would try to take money from people just to get them off of the crime that they committed. So it's the same type of thing.
I guess Lochte has never been to Tijuana.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like that, too. Yeah.
So I was going to ask you, Paul, I don't know if you remember in your journalist days, is there a law or is it illegal to lie in public to the whole world about certain events that happened or didn't happen?
It's not illegal. You can't, if you try to say something that, you mean like in a as a news story?
I don't know. I guess, or maybe, maybe not the news story. Maybe someone who's being interviewed.
No, it's not illegal to do that. Okay. It's just you're opening yourself up to ridicule you do, and people find out about it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a news organization, you can't make stuff up. That's not good.
Mm-hmm.
But so you can't, if you're talking to the police, you can't file a report with false information. That there, you're subject to.
Well, that's what it made it seem like. He was describing an event inaccurately.
The only thing that he exaggerated was that the gun wasn't pointed at his head; instead, it was at a distance. Mm-hmm. That's really, on the face of it, what was inaccurate.
Now, if this happened to me, if I was urinating on the bathroom wall or the door and I busted down the door, the cops are going to arrest my ass, lock me up for maybe the whole day, and fine me $30,000 for lying.
Mm-hmm.
But with Ryan Lochte, nothing happened.
They ran away. They ran away, except a couple of guys.
They were probably trying to take $30,000.
I think a couple of the guys didn't get to run away, and they had to pay thousands of dollars.
Oh, they got fined. Okay. Well, I feel better now.
Well, they didn't get fined. The cops said, hey, we won't arrest you if you give us some money. That's how it works. I'm not thinking, oh, we'll write you a little citation. And, you can mail a check in the mail.
I just think this Ryan White dude got off too easy.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Because if it happened to me, it would be worse. Especially because I'm a brown person.
And you're not an Olympic swimmer.
Yeah, I'm not an Olympic swimmer, and I'm not important.
If it were one of those Nicaraguan athletes, they would not have been as lucky.
Yeah, it just would have been much worse. That's my point. So that's it.
And Lochte has a reputation of being a goofball anyways. So there you go. It's just, privileged white guy. He's partying too loud. And if it was somebody of a different persuasion, they'd call it a riot.
Yeah. Well, I'll continue these Olympic facts throughout the rest of our show.
Throughout the year.
One at a time.
Throughout the years.
Okay, because we're just out of time and I want to play a game.
Okay.
So this game is... Spelling Bee Baseball Edition.
So that's fun.
I'm going to give you some names, unique baseball player names, former and current. And your job is to spell the name correctly with the following catch. You got to spell it backwards.
Mm.
So who would like to go first?
That's tough.
It's going to be tough.
Jeez, can't even spell normal words.
Can't even spell cat backwards.
Is it too difficult to do backwards? If you want, I can do regular.
We'll see.
Okay, let's try.
All right. Who would like to go first?
I'll go.
All right. The first name is Mike Socha, former catcher, now manager of Los Angeles Angels. Mike Socha. So only spell the last name. Socha.
So backwards.
Backwards.
Socha. Okay. A I. All right.
Do you want to keep going? Oh, wait. Keep going. Sorry.
I thought it was. Did you?
I think I hit it too early.
False alarm.
I need a. All right. One more time.
Am I on the right track? A I. S-S-O-C-S? Wow. Jeez, my ears are bleeding.
Okay. Paul, do you want to try?
All right. A-C-S-O-S? There's an I in there somewhere.
C
Do you have a softer?
Let me see. I don't think so. That's pretty loud, huh?
So it's like a boop. Something.
Like a fart poot.
Instead. Yeah, it's
the Jeopardy noise. The Jeopardy noise.
The correct spelling is backwards.
Backwards.
AICSOICS.
Dang.
That's complicated. That'd be hard to spell forwards. Jeez.
Kent Herbeck played first.
Why do we have Arabic origin?
Yeah. I'm offended that this Arabic word name.
Hubab.
Herbeck.
Herbeck.
In my country, we call him Beck.
Herbeck.
Herbeck. Played first baseman for Minnesota Twins.
We know this guy, right? Paul.
Yeah, he was on the Twins. Big power hitter.
But the spelling was weird. Uh-huh. I know it was a weird spelling. Okay.
It's like Icelandic origin.
Herbeck.
K-C... E-R-H.
Sucking in soot.
Okay, that's all right.
Incorrect. That is incorrect.
All right, Paul.
K-E-B-R-H.
Correct. Ding, 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 ding. I don't have a...
Wait, you don't have
spell,
a...
No. Spell that forward again. Let me...
So
H-R-B-E-K?
Yeah.
Oh, because I put the C. Yeah, so
missed,
I was close.
You missed the C. All
so,
right.
Do you have to do one?
Sure.
Give one for Albert.
Give one for me.
All right. See, I thought we were going to do something like, oh, is it a real baseball player or fake or something? But
we can do that too, but so, we've heard of these people.
Let's see. Tuffy Gosiewicz.
Oh.
Tuffy Gosiewicz? What?
All right. I'll later.
His last name is Gosiewicz.
Ghost a witch. Ghost a witch. Go like ghost
on the Diamondbacks.
Oh, okay.
Catcher on the Diamondbacks right now.
Ghost a witch.
Don't cheat.
I'm not. Ghost a witch.
Ghost a witch.
H C T I W E S O G. Go switch. Go switch. Go switch. Go switch.
Okay.
You're gonna
H C I W A S S O G. Come on.
Oh, ouch, you're dead.
It's H C S I W E S O G.
What's this Icelandic stuff?
It's actually Jewish, I think.
Okay. All right, let me find
that's
one.
Tough.
Let me find a weird one.
I found a pretty crazy one too.
No, let me give Valedo a little taste of his. Let's see.
How about Samarja?
Did you figure that out? I have that one, yeah.
No. I gotta give it a better one.
Samarja.
Syndergaard.
There you go. That's a good one.
Okay. Jared Saltalamacchia.
Oh, what? Salty Malty?
That's his nickname, Salty, but his real name is Saltalamacchia.
Saltalamacchia.
Let me say it slow, because Paul knows it. He's a catcher, right?
Yeah, these catchers have tough names.
So, Jared Saltalamacchia.
Saltilla?
Saltalamacchia.
Okay, Saltalamacchia.
Italian.
Yeah, it sounds
is it Italian.
Saltalamacchia!
Saltalamacchia!
Okay, I'm going to spell it the way it sounds. Saltalamacchia. Well, but Machiavellian. Remember,
that's a Latin origin.
Okay, Machiavelli. So, I'm going to think.
Mm-hmm.
Saltalamacchia.
Machia. All right.
You're not going to survive.
Okay. Saltalamacchia.
You're not cheating.
No, no. Yeah. No. All right. A-I-H-C-A-M-A-L-E-T-L-A-S. Saltalamacchia. Yeah? Is this wrong?
You want to try?
Yeah, let me try.
All right.
Let us
A-I-H-C-C-A-N... A-L-I-T-L-A-S.
Oh my, you were so close. Instead of, you said salty.
Uh-huh.
Salta, you put the...
So, I had the A.
You were close.
So I wasn't sure where that A went.
So you were off by one letter?
He's off by That's one it? Letter.
So what do we get for not spelling them right?
Well, you spelled one right, so you.
Oh, Herbeck. Right. You got Herbeck. You get a point.
Herbeck.
You get a, right, I got a point.
You won this week.
So you
got
to keep track of your scores for Spelling Bee baseball game or baseball.
Okay.
So at the end of the season, we'll tally up the points for all the Balderdash games and Spelling Bee baseball edition.
Okay.
Do you have a fake one real quick?
A fake one?
Or a fake or real one?
Okay. Is this a philosopher or a baseball player? Okay.
Okay.
Socrates Brito.
I know. I know.
I know.
This is it's a real Diamondbacks, right?
Yeah.
And but it's actually pronounced Socrates, so.
No. Socrates. Socrates.
Make sure you tune in to what's going on with the Giants game.
Don't tell me anything right now.
Okay.
What inning is it?
You need to listen real time.
What inning is it?
The eighth.
The eighth?
Okay. Bottom of the eighth.
Close call? Or just don't...
The score is pretty comfortable right now.
Okay.
No, it could be bad.
Yesterday was bad. Yesterday was depressing.
The past 2 months. Yeah. Try the past 2 months.
Yeah, but yesterday was really just like, come on.
Yeah, that was. Even just Posey reacted very frustrated outwardly.
I sat that one out. I boycotted yesterday.
So I had this question. Hunter Pence, he was injured a month or two ago. Hamstring issue. Does that affect a baseball? Will that affect him for the rest of his baseball career?
I think it will shave off a couple months from his career.
Yeah, it'll take a while for him to recover fully.
Because I noticed that he's just not the same anymore.
Plus, I think getting hit in the eyes hurt his ability to see the ball.
Hmm.
I think that's hurt him too. But his hamstring, like, he won't be able to pull it again because they took a muscle out of his leg.
Hey.
They replaced it with a robotic...
I think it's like a rubber band in there.
It's just a little rubber band.
A rubber band. Is it really?
You know those rubber bands that hold your braces together? It's one of those.
Oh, those little tiny blue things?
It's two of those.
So just don't snap those and you're okay.
Well, he didn't make
But if they snap, it won't be painful.
No.
He did make an interesting catch the other, was it, I don't know, it was last week where he fell down?
He was on his back and he made a catch.
Yeah, he made a catch while on the back.
Basket catch.
Very
Yeah, neat. He didn't have enough cold brew that day.
But then, Hunter Pence is the kind of like Sandoval, see ball, hit ball, run like crazy. So I noticed he just swings and misses a lot. You know, that's his game, but he's not sometimes the best guy to have up there during crunch time.
No, but you need those free swingers.
You do.
Threatening.
Because that's what gives that power and that motivation.
Yeah.
And then with Belt struggling and Blanco coming up at the right time and just not helping.
And then you got... Well, R. Arianzo.
Yes, R. Arianzo.
Spell that.
He's just still around.
Still around, still coming up on key at bats. Yeah. I don't know why the right people
I don't know, exactly. get it. How does Bochy just say?
Last night, that was frustrating, was they had the right guys up, and the Dodgers got away with those hanging
I'm just glad I didn't listen.
That's why I knew it was going to happen, so I listened to Scully.
Oh, you listened?
Yeah.
Scully's fun.
He's the only thing that kept that game interesting.
So you listen to Scully for a little bit?
I learned something about Hill and the poor tragedies that occurred in his life.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You listen to Scully, you will learn something new every time.
You will. Yeah.
Because he researches that night. I don't know how.
He's like an encyclopedia of baseball.
Yeah. You're going to miss him after this year.
I know.
Have to pay homage to Vince Scully at the end of the season.
All right, we will. But to find you, it's your assignment to find interesting snippets of Scully broadcasting games, baseball games. I like Kruko and Kipe. They have a distinct personality, both of them. But when you listen to Scully, I like how informative it is.
There's nobody. The problem is there's nobody else like Scully. No. He's really unique. Nobody else does that.
Yeah.
Well, he's inspired John Miller. Like John Miller, growing up, listened to Vince Scully, and he paid attention to how he would weave his stories into the game, and that they would be stories that were relevant to the situation in the game. Mm-hmm. So he was saying how that inspired him, and you know he's really tried to be somewhat like Vince Scully.
Yeah, and that takes work. That's a lot of work. You don't just all of a sudden every night you go in there and can start spieling off these stories.
Exactly like me preparing this show for ASP Stuff Radio. I'm kind of like the Scully of podcasting.
It's about the same. Your podcasts are similar to how Scully would run a podcast.
You listen to any random amateur produced podcast out there, and it's not well thought.
What is it? The Cox and Glocks?
And Scully would appreciate that.
Yeah.
I had to dig deep to find that.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
On that note,
This is ASP Stuff Radio. We are all stuffed up with poots.
Toots.
Poots and shoots.
Poots and shoots. Butt shoots. Pooting out their poops.
I crossed you off my list of. I can't break through.
Welcome to ASP Stuff Radio, the internet radio show that will inspire you to collect farts.
Inspire you to what?
collect farts.
We have just received distressing news, although there were a lot of people figuring that we were coming close to the end. The story out of Arizona, we understand right now that Muhammad Ali, the former Cassius Clay, has passed away. That, of course, will be a huge story throughout the sports world, affecting not only boxing fans, fans of every sport, and those who don't care about sports. He had so much of a reaction from his fans and the impression that he made on so many people. Muhammad Ali. What was it? Move like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Something like that. Float like a butterfly. Okay. Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
Action.
Go ahead. Right. Go.
Fart.